Hi, and welcome to the third season of the Holistic Matters podcast series titled The Holistic Approach to Pet Care. My name is Kara Cradle, and I'll be facilitating your audio journey into the world of nutritional support for pets, the importance of the endocannabinoid system for animals, and the unique components of the veterinary profession. I'm here with Jody Griffiths, who's been working as a certified veterinary technician for over 20 years. This is our fourth and final episode of the season. We hope you'll enjoy insights from veterinarian Dr. Patrick Mahaney. Jody, could you tell us a little bit about Dr. Mahaney?
Absolutely. It was such a pleasure to talk with Dr. Mahaney. I love his approach to veterinary medicine and the uniqueness of his practice. He's been practicing since 1999 and founded California Pet Acupuncture and Wellness in 2008. His unique practice combines Western veterinary medicine with acupuncture and traditional Chinese veterinary medicine as well. He believes in a holistic, and that's holistic with a W, approach, taking a step back and looking at his patients as a whole, and emphasizes the importance of a whole food approach to nutrition. And what makes this practice unique is it's a premier concierge house call vet practice in the Los Angeles area. Dr. Mahaney is not only certified in veterinary acupuncture, but he also is an accomplished journalist with a large social media presence. I love following him on Instagram because he often posts pics of him with his patients at their home.
It certainly sounds like Dr. Mahaney has a unique set of skills, and it's clear that he cares a lot about his pet patients, animals in general, and sharing the positive aspects of the holistic approach to pet care. I also love the idea of veterinary visits in your own home. My dog has some serious anxiety every time we go to the vet's office. I can definitely see how meeting pet patients at their homes could be beneficial.
I totally agree. There is something special about seeing patients in their own home in comfortable surroundings. Take so much pressure off the pets and the owners. I have two labs, and trips to the vet can be quite an adventure, so I'd love to have a vet like Dr. Mahaney coming out to our house for their vet needs. To start our discussion with Dr. Mahaney, I asked him to begin just by explaining why he uses a holistic approach to his practice.
Well, I think I've always been interested in health and wellness for myself. I grew up in a family that prioritized things like whole food feeding. My mom had an extensive garden in certain places where we lived, like Indiana, New Jersey, growing up. So I've always had this role model of following a healthy lifestyle. My dad used to run marathons. Both my parents have always been very active. So from an early age, my brother, sister, and I have been generally put on this path of living a healthy life. And then certainly I've always been interested in science and medicine, and that's what led me down the path of becoming a veterinarian. And I really feel like to be an effective healthcare practitioner, you have to follow healthy lifestyle and habits yourself. You can't be like a doctor outside of the office having a cigarette, eating McDonald's, and effectively convey the message of what is good health. And so I feel like I need to be a role model in my community. I'm also just really, truly interested in it. I feel best and function best when I'm eating well and being active in ways that are beneficial for my current state of physical being. I'm a 46-year-old guy. I have some chronic ailments in terms of intervertebral disc disease. So I have some chronic low back pain that I have to manage. And so I try to do things that are appropriate for me at this point. So I just feel like it's kind of naturally in me to want to do this, and I really want to try to share that message of whole food feeding and holistic health with my patients and with my clients.
It's interesting to me that his early experiences with health and wellness with his family are part of what led him to be a veterinarian. I've actually experienced somewhat of the opposite in my life. My interest in science and health growing up was mild at most, and it wasn't until I started working in the nutrition, health, and wellness industry after finishing up my bachelor's degree that I began to care more about my lifestyle, what I was eating, my activity levels, and so on. I agree with Dr. Mahaney that it makes you a more effective professional, whatever your career, if you walk the walk and talk the talk the best that you can.
I feel like I've seen both worlds in my career. I worked in a conventional Western-minded practice for several years. There wasn't much emphasis put on nutrition, and early on I was taught that if pet owners were feeding a somewhat reliable brand of pet food, that their nutritional needs were met. I don't agree with that anymore. There are many variables that should be taken into consideration when we're evaluating a patient's nutritional needs. Learning about integrative medicine and working with so many awesome nutrition-focused veterinarians over the last 12 years has really opened my eyes to the importance of healthy choices, not only for my dog, but for my family as well. So next I asked Dr. Mahaney how he's taken his his life experiences and applied them to the way he approaches his pet patients. As I already mentioned, he has a unique way of approaching pet care holistically and sharing the message of holistic health and the importance of nutrition with pet owners is really important to him.
Well, I think I went through a very conventional training when it comes to veterinary medicine and going to veterinary school. I went to University of Pennsylvania, finished in 1999, and I actually graduated from school thinking, okay, dogs and cats should just eat dog food and cat food and never eat human food. People food is bad. Don't feed your pet any people food. And then I just really realized over the years that the messaging doesn't really intuitively make sense because nature just makes food. And then we as a society have decided dogs and cats eat dog and cat food, and that kind of something gets lost in translation when you're trying to make this diet that's going to be nutritionally complete and balanced for growth over all life stages, and they're just going to eat that for months to years of their life. And I saw the consequences of problems related to eating that kind of diet in terms of obesity and chronic ailments that probably would have otherwise been prevented if a pet was eating a whole food diet. So I just had this awareness that, okay, pets need to be doing something different. I went through acupuncture training through the International Veterinary Acupuncture Society, or IVIS, in 2005, 2006, and I was introduced to the Chinese medicine theory of food energy, and that made sense to me. And then I started making home-prepared dog food for my dog, Cardiff, based off of a recipe from Dr. Pitcairn's Guide to Nutrition, and that made sense too. And then with the advent of the melamine pet food crisis and other types of wake-up calls to pet owners, it's just been an increased awareness about why am I putting this processed food into my pet when I could be putting whole foods into them like I would do so myself. And I think just generally as a society, we've shifted towards the increased accessibility of higher quality foods should we choose to feed them to ourselves or our pets or not is another story. But I feel as though there's just a kind of a general awareness that people should be feeding their pets healthier foods. And in my practice as a holistic practitioner, I certainly look at the entire animal. Like, let's say I get called to somebody's home to come check out an ear infection in a dog. I'm not just only looking at the ear. I'm doing a full body exam because really the entire body has to function well in order for each individual part to function well. And that's really where, for me, the concept of holism comes into my practice, is that I'm taking this thorough approach and assessing all parts of the patient and also their environment and their lifestyle in each physical exam, because everything builds and has to work together in order for the organism to function best.
So I think his description of the concept of holism is really important here. And this is something we talk about all the time on holisticmatters.com, how looking at entire systems of the body trumps just looking at one individual symptom. And that seems to apply for both humans and pets. Also, I'll just say that for most of my life, I grew up with dogs and cats, and I definitely did not think twice about feeding them plain dog food and plain cat food. It wasn't until I got the dog I now have, who a couple of years ago went through a phase where he was just getting sick all the time. I reached out to a vet in my family, and she recommended a different type of food for dogs with sensitive stomachs. And no kidding, he's been fine ever since. It's crazy that it didn't even occur to me to adjust his food in the first place.
So true. We are learning more and more that pet foods are not necessarily one size fits all for all dogs and cats. All animals have different nutritional requirements. Even litter mates could have different requirements, so variety is really important. I also like to suggest fresh foods as part of the diet. Dr. Mahaney mentioned taking a step back and looking at the body as a whole and recognizing that there are certain conditions that might need certain nutritional requirements. The body is such an incredible machine that has so much synergy, and the more variety we feed it, the less likely there will be nutritional gaps that build up over time. All families are different and have different dynamics, like the home cooks for their pets. My husband is our dog food chef in our house, and he takes a lot of pride in preparing wholesome food for our fur babies. This doesn't work for all families. Some need convenience of a prepared food, and that's totally okay as well. I was interested in how Dr. Mahaney's clients respond to his holistic approach to pet care. This is what he had to say.
I think it's a matter of figuring out a way to integrate the two. I have some clients that exclusively want to feed their dogs or their cats a whole food diet, and others who want to do a partial whole food diet. And then also feed some processed food, in part because of convenience. Like I've so many well-intentioned clients that like have two large dogs that they want to just feed a cooked human grade whole food diet, but then the cost or the preparation becomes an issue. Right. And so they then in part rely, and I work with, and I'm in Los Angeles and I work as a house call practitioner, basically like a personal or concierge veterinary to clients. And so the clientele that I work with is generally educated and relatively affluent client. And so even some of those people can't afford to feed their two golden retrievers exclusively a cooked whole food based diet that either they make themselves or they purchase. And so some of them do rely in part on a processed food diet. And I think that's better than not doing any whole food at all. If you can get some whole food nutrients into you, better. And if say you can't yourself purchase something that is pre-prepared, that's commercially available, then make a partial home prepared diet. It's not overly complicated. Not every bite has to be nutritionally complete and balanced. If you have variety in your nutrients over time, you will achieve balance. And if you're feeding something like kibble, you always could add in your home prepared cooked proteins, vegetables, fruits as snacks and such, and you're going to get some of those whole food benefits without being in one concise little package that presents itself as a meal.
I can totally see how, you know, how you feed your pets and how that relationship works really depends on, you know, your lifestyle, you know, how much time you have. And I can see how different people end up finding, you know, different solutions. Personally, I barely have time to feed myself and my husband, let alone prepare cooked meals for my dog. Definitely sending props to people who work hard to give their pets a whole food diet.
From personal experience, I can tell you that it is a lot of extra work, but my husband and I have a really good system that we've worked out. We have two labs and we make a batch of their food about once every couple weeks, portion it out into meal-sized containers, and then we store it in the freezer. We feel good about knowing that they're getting a variety, food that isn't heavily processed and it doesn't have all the additives that's needed for preservation. But like I said before, this isn't realistic for everyone, so even small additions of fresh food, like Dr. Mahaney mentioned, is great too. Next, we talked about his unique concierge-style house call practice, definitely a non-traditional veterinary practice. I asked him to explain why he decided to go that route instead of a more traditional brick-and-mortar practice.
Well, it's certainly been an evolution over the past 20 years, and it's something that I kind of realized that my initial projection certainly has changed, but my plan was to be a radiologist, so somebody who's just interpreting MRIs and CT scans and x-rays and ultrasounds, and I still love that too because it's an incredible tool to use all those different tools in figuring out what is the actual disease diagnosis and how do we go about treatment. So my plan to be a radiologist didn't go further after I did my internship, which is not a required part of being a veterinarian, but if you want to be a specialist, generally you do an internship. It also gives you a huge amount of clinical experience in 1 year, so it really sets you up well for the rest of your career. So not matching for a radiology residency, I went into a couple different types of practice at brick and mortar facilities. My first was at a corporate practice called Banfield in the D.C. area. That's where I went from University of Pennsylvania to Washington, D.C. to do my private practice internship, and then worked at a Banfield for a year and a half, and it just wasn't really the right practice style for me. And I've always been interested in emergency practice, so I then did emergency only for 3 years, and that was super interesting and very rewarding. But I worked crazy hours, and I'm like, okay, I can't stay up all night and work and function the next day. And at the time, I was a big yoga practitioner and still am, and went through yoga teacher training. And so I was teaching yoga part-time because I had huge chunks of time off in between my practice shifts at the emergency hospital. I would sometimes have like a full week off with zero responsibilities. Like, this is amazing. I could have like this whole other life of doing something else. And also like in emergency practice too, I would just see the client and the patient then, and then they would be treated and discharged, and they would go back to their general practice vet. So there was no like constant demand for me to continually communicate. So I just had these huge gaps of time. So doing yoga and having kind of a healthier lifestyle led me to then want to pursue veterinary acupuncture training. So I also had acupuncture and chiropractic to manage some of my own chronic pain issues. And so I got that training and moved to LA in 2006 and was working at a 24/7 type practice where I was doing a combination of general practice and emergency and still working kind of crazy hours. And I really always wanted to have my own business. And so in driving around, taking my now deceased dog, Cardiff, to dog parks in the Hollywood Hills, I would see mobile veterinarians, mobile groomers, basically any kind of mobile service. And I had that aha moment, like, hey, I need to have my own mobile Chinese medicine practice. At the time, I didn't want to offer like kind of the more conventional approach because I was still working part-time in a facility. So fortunately, I had a boss at this practice that is a lawyer, and he helped me to incorporate myself as a small business. So I did an S-Corp in California, Pet Acupuncture and Wellness was born. And I started offering acupuncture, Chinese medicine, food, energy consultations, and dispensation of herbs and supplements to clients on a house call basis. And then, of course, like the dog that I'm seeing at home also needs other services, and then the other pet in the house needs services. And so they're just very organically grew this need for me to do more, and I kept on building clientele primarily through referrals. And so I've just kind of gone to this current place of where I am as a result of persistency and really just trying to like serve my clients in a manner above and beyond what they would get in that 15 to 30 minute appointment with the veterinarian. I really like invest a huge amount of time and kind of dedicating whatever I can to helping my patients and helping my clients and being available in my capacity to help them whenever there is a problem. Of course, like I turn my phone off overnight, but whenever they have a problem, they contact me and either I'm solving the problem for them or I'm helping to facilitate where the problem can be solved. Like some dogs shouldn't be seen at home for like when they've cut their paw, they really should go to a hospital to have it assessed. And so I have to like figure out how to help the client to get to that hospital to get whatever needs to be done. So it's been a pretty interesting evolution. I mean, it's been 20 years. I plan on practicing probably for another 10 or so. I just feel like in my mid to late 50s is a natural time that I could be doing other things with my time beyond being kind of like a indentured servant to clients and
right.
Pets. So I feel like doing one thing for 30 years is long enough. It's time to develop other things. And fortunately, like at this age in veterinary medicine, there's so many things that veterinarians can do beyond just clinical practice. We can work as a consultant for companies. We can create products. We can be business ownerships in other capacities. The information age has really provided a lot of new opportunities for veterinarians as well. So it's actually, I think, a really good time to be a veterinarian.
So Dr. Mahaney has truly worked his way toward developing a practice that fits his lifestyle and veterinary philosophy. Sometimes you have to do a bunch of different things to know what you like and don't like, which scenarios you work best in, and where you really thrive.
I agree, and that's what makes finding a vet that fits what you believe in and the philosophies that you prefer so important. I feel there are many pet owners that are looking for alternatives when it comes to the care for their pets, and as Dr. Mahaney was describing his unique practice, since I'm a veterinary technician, I couldn't help but wonder about his staffing scenario. I asked him if he has a technician with him to do the restraints and such. He has a very interesting solution for this, and it's not relying on the pet parents for assistance.
So I've certainly read enough AVMA, professional liability insurance trust publications to know that I shouldn't rely on my clients to restrain their own animal, because client A gets bitten by cat B and lawsuit C comes up and you're sued for $1 million. So I certainly don't want that to happen. So great question. I have a significant other, a husband, Phil, who is basically my business manager / driver / assistant technician. I've trained him over the years to be able to do restraint, not to like go to a client's house and do blood draws on his own or something like that. He is the primary person that helps me. And then I also have a series of veterinary assistants or RVTs that could accompany me, or I could send to a client's home individually to do a service, like a vitamin B12 injection, a subcutaneous fluid administration, kind of whatever needs to be done. And so I absolutely feel as though I need to have help in that way. And it's been kind of great. And there's challenges to working with your spouse, of course, because sometimes you want to like see the person in a certain role and not this role that's maybe causing you some frustration every now and then. But at the same time, we have the same schedule. As I'm the lead doctor in this process, he basically has to do everything that I say when it comes to we're in this role of being service providers. And so it actually works out really well. But certainly I feel as though I need help in a certain capacity. I'm not really looking to, say, add another veterinarian at this point, because what I do is very personal. With the clientele that I work with, there's an expectation of confidentiality. And I also don't want to kind of dilute what I'm doing too much, because if that person that I've taken on to work with me part-time has a health problem, a personal problem, suddenly wants to not work anymore, then I'm left with all that extra work. So I'm really just kind of going about it on my own right now. But also I partner with veterinary specialists in the area very extensively to share cases. That works out really well to be able to have a team approach to collaborate with other specialists, but also even general practice vets. Like if I take on a puppy or kitten and they need to have a spay or neuter, I'm not like doing it on a plastic covered table in the client's home under injectable anesthesia. I'm referring them to a hospital so that colleagues of mine who do general practice can do that procedure. So it's a really good way to go about collaborating with your associates.
Wow, I can't imagine working with my significant other on a regular basis, but I'm glad Dr. Mahaney makes it work.
So true. Working with your partner can be challenging, but also rewarding. My husband and I work for the same company, but in different departments. So even though we don't work closely together, it is nice to see his smile in the hall occasionally. And how great it is that Dr. Mahaney has formed these relationships with colleagues to help serve the needs of his patients outside of what his practice offers. At this point, we've already heard a lot from Dr. Mahaney about how he uses multiple modalities in his practice, such as acupuncture, traditional Chinese medicine, and chiropractic. Next in our conversation, he went a bit deeper on why he believes a multimodality approach is the best for his patients.
Absolutely. I feel so, like, I consider the multimodal approach, and that can be applied to various ailments. Probably one of the top ones that I end up working with patients is the multimodal approach to pain management, often for arthritis or intervertebral disc disease or various forms of trauma or sometimes even cancer. And conventionally, when it comes to pain management in animals, we're thinking about non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, also known as NSAIDs, or drugs that have more of a pain-numbing effect, like a tramadol or a gabapentin or even something more, you know, bigger gun if needed at some point, sometimes depending on the pet's type of pain that they're having. And unfortunately, with those medications is that they can be effective. They can have side effects that are mild to severe. So in order to try to reduce the potential for these side effects, like you're trying to help the pet, you don't want to cause another problem by just using this particular medication. I want to try to reduce my patient's reliance on these medications. And that's when weight management, environment, and lifestyle modification comes in. The use of nutraceuticals, for example, an older dog or any age dog that has joint problems, I would do a oral joint support product, something that might have glucosamine or chondroitin or other types of components that help to reduce inflammation or augment joint health. They use a lot of fish oil as well as a natural anti-inflammatory. And then treatments like acupuncture, acupressure, laser treatment, those are things that I commonly use. I'm not trained in chiropractic, but I find that sometimes just by doing range of motion evaluations, I will replace a shoulder when it's been subluxated. I'll end up like gently getting a vertebra to go back into place. And that's just some of what I know from years of doing physical exams on animals. So it's always trying to take the approach of using different tools that are safe and using those to try to reduce the need to take certain medications.
It's truly amazing that a diverse set of modalities can address all sorts of different veterinary issues, from pain management, arthritis, trauma, and cancer. And it's so hard to see your pet in pain. I'm sure a lot of pet parents would do just about anything to ease their pain. And I'm imagining that puts a veterinarian in a tough position. Would you say so?
Yeah, it definitely does. But I think for practitioners like Dr. Mahaney, who truly believe in this multiple modality approach with a heavy emphasis on lifestyle modifications, nutrition, for example, it can have a huge impact on pet owners who are just looking for the healthiest solution for their pets. And I asked Dr. Mahaney what he thought about pet parents speaking out about integrative veterinary care.
When you have a pet owner and they've either had multiple pets or they've had one pet for a long time, they've seen kind of a cycle of what is generally needed for a certain life stage. Like for puppies and kittens, there's not a huge amount that's needed beyond, say, creating the appropriate level of immunity through immunizations, getting them on the right path when it comes to food. If you choose to neuter or spay your animal, then getting that done. And a lot of times puppies are and kittens are pretty healthy until they start eating things that they shouldn't, or perhaps they develop environmental type allergies, like atopic dermatitis, and so then there's a need to pursue treatments. And so as a result, people are becoming aware over time of, this is what my pet maybe needs. Is there more of a natural way to do things that could be safer? And so I feel as though there is more of awareness of that. And I mean, it, me being in Southern California, where generally people are fairly healthy, I think people are already doing this for themselves, and so they then want to apply it to their pets.
I think it definitely takes some time as a pet owner to figure out what works for you and your pet. And depending on how many pets you have at once or how many you have over the years, you may experience different needs in different animals. Because like in humans, pets often have very different behaviors and very different needs. So one solution won't work for every animal.
That's absolutely true. And I think a huge component of our pet's lifestyle that owners often don't think about is what they eat. But as veterinary professionals, we know that a pet's diet plays a monumental role in their everyday function. So I asked Dr. Mahaney to talk a bit more about his philosophy on nutrition and animal health.
Oh, yeah. Well, certainly it's the building blocks for all body tissues, the foods that enter our pets' mouths. And so we have to make sure that they're very bioavailable. If you're feeding foods that are not absorbed very well from your digestive tract, either due to the health of your digestive tract or the format of the food itself, then the food is really not going to do its job. So when it comes to, say, bioavailability of nutrients, things that exist as they do in nature are generally more bioavailable than those that are processed. Natural vitamins have a shape that better fits receptors in the body as compared to synthetic vitamins, which may not bind as well and could not achieve the same effect. We also have to consider, like, protein, for example. If you're consuming a fresh muscle meat protein, like the chicken breast or lean cuts of beef or something like that, or fish, as compared to protein meals, which conventionally go into dog foods, which are very high heat cooked and processed to be high protein in a small volume, those generally are not as bioavailable or not absorbed as well by the body. And so I really feel like you have to set the body up well by having a good basis in terms of the nutrients going in, looking very much like they do, or exactly like they do in nature. I'm not a raw food diet advocate. Some holistic veterinarians are, but I'm just concerned about safety in my clients' homes. I have seen pathogenic bacteria affect dogs and people in the household before, just because the owner was so committed to feeding a raw meat diet. So I do believe in cooked meat diets. So it feels that you can slightly modify nature's creation by cooking, which itself makes it more digestible and also creates a higher level of safety, considering we now live with our dogs in our homes and they sleep in our beds and they're all over the place. That's how I believe that food should be as close to as it exists in nature as possible before it goes into our pets' bodies and our own bodies.
So Dr. Mahaney brings up the important concept of nutrient bioavailability here. And this is something we talk about quite often on Holistic Matters. Bioavailability is this concept of how much of a substance is absorbed into the body after being delivered. So the bioavailability of a certain nutrient after a meal, for example. And if only a low fraction of that substance is then successfully found in the body's circulation and delivered to organs, it must have had low bioavailability. And the concept of bioavailability goes hand in hand with the concept of bioaccessibility, a measure of how well something like a nutrient may be accessible for digestion and absorption. So a nutrient may be bioavailable, but its packaging may limit its bioaccessibility. The goal is to optimize both bioavailability and bioaccessibility. And as Dr. Mahaney says, you can do that by consuming food that is minimally processed, or as he says, as close to nature as possible. Whole food nutrition is a key pillar on holisticmatters.com, and it's great to hear Dr. Mahaney confirm its importance for pet care as well.
Definitely. And you did a great job of explaining that, Kara. Those two concepts can be a little bit confusing, so thanks for putting it into perspective and helping us to better understand that. We know how important food is for the health of the body, since it provides the fuel the cells need to function effectively. I love that Dr. Mahaney mentions that the shape of whole food nutrients fit the receptors in the body better compared to synthetic vitamins. And just so everyone understands the difference, synthetic vitamins are ones that are made in a lab and are trying to mimic the natural vitamin. Natural vitamins come from foods we eat. So switching gears a bit, I was intrigued by the CVJ credential that is behind Dr. Mahaney's name. And so let's hear what Dr. Mahaney has to say about this unique certification in veterinary journalism.
There's an organization called the Veterinary News Network. And when I got the certified veterinary journalist certificate back in 2012, I think it was, I'm not actually certain if they're still offering it. I think they are. I've always felt as though I had a message to share with the world, and how do I get it out there? And in 2000 and let's see, 7, 8-ish, I had a neighbor who's a publicist, and he reached out to me and said, "Hey, do you ever think of doing any media work?" I'm like, "Sure. What do I do? Get me a couple of different opportunities." And so that kind of started things off, doing some blogging, doing some radio appearances. And I just kind of kept on consistently creating material. So a lot of the writing I did in those years was for PetMD, and then also their offshoot Pet360, which was purchased by Chewy and no longer exists. And then just getting different writing opportunities in journals and things like that. And so I've always felt I wanted to share this message, just figure out how to go about doing it. And I figured having this kind of additional letters behind my name showing that I'm doing this on a regular basis could be beneficial. So
I love that he is following this call to share his veterinary expertise with the world. There's so much information out there for everyone, pet owners included certainly, and it can be hard to sort through the mess to find truly meaningful and practical content for veterinarians and pet owners alike.
Yes. And it, similarly to our conversation with Dr. Sheila Dodson about hemp for pets and being an expert voice in an industry that's filled with unregulated and uncertified pet products, Dr. Mahaney described the importance of showing his clients, through media, the details of his veterinary approach and the ideals behind his practice, why he treats animals the way he does, and whatnot. Either you as a professional tell your audience, or they'll find information elsewhere. Sometimes you can only guarantee that the information is high quality if you're the one that's producing it yourself.
And nutrition guidelines are likely something he discusses quite a bit online and with his clients.
Yes.
My general belief is that not every bite has to be nutritionally complete and balanced, like goes into conventional kibble and most canned foods. And so you can have some days where maybe you have more protein or less protein, more fiber, less fiber, all depending on the patient's needs and how the food is working for them. So kind of like what we people do with our own, we don't go to the grocery store and buy a package of people food and only eat that. Like we have variety in our diet, and also seasonal variety is good as well. So you're not only eating exclusively these nutrients, that you have to have some change. So I try to just generally give people guidance to move more towards a whole food diet, and then say they want to do something commercial, then I try to find the different options for them that are available commercially. If they want to do home prepared, I always recommend going to see a veterinary nutritionist, and you don't even necessarily have to go to physically see the nutritionist. Through universities, there are veterinary nutrition departments that will do consultations with clients where they take the health information about the pet, the medical record, they have to have up-to-date blood and urine testing at least, and they will advise the client on recipe options for nutritionally complete and balanced home-prepared diets. So that's generally the route that I go. And certainly somebody wants to feed a partial kibble diet and they just want to add some whole food to it, then there's kind of a non-exact formula of adding certain amounts of protein and vegetables and carbohydrates. I do believe in feeding some grains to pets, not processed grains, but whole grains like you would eat yourself. Certainly cats have much of a less of a need of it as compared to dogs, because cats are obligate carnivores, but they can eat some grain as well. And even in the recipes I see in veterinary nutritionist formula for cats, that there is some grain component to it just because of certain nutrients that are provided by it. So I'm not the formulator, but I'm trying to pull all the information together for the client and put them on a path that ends up working for them.
So Dr. Mahaney mentions grain-free diets, and this made me think of the controversy in the last year that's related to dilated cardiomyopathy in dogs and how grain-free diets were speculated to be the cause for this increase in this disease. And so I asked him what his opinion was on this.
It's unknown if there is one particular aspect of these diets that's causing dogs to develop dilated cardiomyopathy or DCM, or if it's multiple components, and it's unclear at this point, but the kind of basis from my understanding seems as though what we're starting with is a processed food diet like kibble, and it's been made exclusively without grains in it, but instead has lentils, peas and lentils, or sweet potatoes. And so those kind of four different components of this equation. And so we have decided as a pet-owning society that grains are bad. Your dog should not eat grains, or cats should not eat grains. I can understand more cats not eating grains because they're obligate carnivores, but dogs are omnivores, and they can certainly digest grains, and there have been studies that show that their enzymes have evolved over time to digest grains, as have humans. And so we've decided grains are bad, which I think we have to consider that as makes sense to me in some way, because the grains that go into pet foods are feed-grade grains. They've been deemed unfit for human consumption. They often have higher amounts of mold-based toxins like mycotoxins, and that can be toxic in a small or large amount depending on what gets into that bag. So not feeding grains can be beneficial in that way because we're avoiding these feed-grade grains, but by deciding that grains are bad and trying to rely on other types of carbohydrates like the lentils, peas, and sweet potatoes, something is missing, and it's leading to this very severe and potentially fatal problem. So that's where I think it comes back to having variety of nutrients so that your dog isn't eating one thing their entire life or not for months of their lives. I generally will advise clients, if they do want to, say, feed a grain-free diet that's kibble-based, that as they're finishing that one bag, they have another bag that has grains in it, and they incorporate it into it, and they transition from one to the other, or they mix the two of them together, or they incorporate some grains that are human grade that they'd be eating themselves. So I think there's a lot of ways to go about doing it, but there's not a 100% exact way of knowing if what you're doing is right or not. But I don't think the extreme view of exclusively grain diets is beneficial for pets.
It seems like the two concepts we keep coming back to are variety and quality. Just like for humans, it's important for animals to have a quality diet with a lot of variety.
You are exactly right, Kara. The more variety we provide the body, the more the body has to choose from. Kind of like a buffet of nutrients. It would be much easier if we had a way to test what each animal needs for optimal health, but we don't have the ability to do that. Toward the end of our conversation with Dr. Mahaney, I asked about several statistics from years past that describe the relationship between people and pets in the United States. According to a 2019 Washington Post report, between 49 and 68% of American households include pets, with the large majority of these pets being dogs and cats.
So virtually half of all Americans have pets, at least.
Yes. And knowing how important our dogs are to our family, this is no surprise to me. I actually expected it to be higher.
What were Dr. Mahaney's reflections?
Well, certainly our society has changed over the years, and I think people generally tend to be a little bit more isolated. They're in their homes, so having their pets around as their companions is an important part of their life. And also, people are not getting married as young, they're not having kids as young, so having a pet for a lot of, like even for myself, is like something I would think of as like having a child. So that that pet may fill the role of a child for some people's lives, or just give them companionship that they may not otherwise have. So I feel as though pets have become a very important part of the family fabric. And really, I only see small animals that are non-exotic. So all of my patients are dogs or cats, and I see how important they are in people's lives and the links that they go to alter their lives to best serve their pet's life. I'm always amazed by some of the links that my clients will go to give their pets the best quality of life possible and the best care. And sometimes I'm even astounded by the fees that they will pay in terms of long-term specialty care, like oncology services or internal medicine or things like that. It's kind of amazing to see some of these very large bills that are, almost seem as though they are bills for human human mm-hmm. medical treatments. So I really feel like the role of the pet in the family has changed over time, and now they truly are family members and not just like something that's tied up in your backyard to keep your bad people away. And I so often hear, like, especially when we have a client that's feeding more of a whole food-based diet for their pet, that my pet eats better than I do. I've heard that time and time again. I'm like, and I've seen it, too. I'm like, okay, you're ordering fast food, you're drinking soda. Okay, it kind of makes sense. Why don't you start to make some changes in your life so that you can eat healthier and be a healthier person yourself? It's, you know, the longer you live that unhealthy lifestyle of eating poorly or not exercising or having other bad habits, the harder it's going to be to go back to a healthier state. I mean, you can always change. You can always benefit from leading that healthier lifestyle. But at the same time, it's better to not have to like suddenly decide that you need to lose 30 pounds and just stay healthier and trimmer. Like the effects of, I don't mean to tangent too much, but obesity is the number one nutritional disease in pets. I ask people all the time, like, what do you think is the number one nutritional disease in pets? And they get stumped at like calcium deficiency, not enough phosphorus, other mm-hmm. vitamins and minerals. I'm like, no, it's too many calories. And that is in part a direct fault of the processed pet food industry. When you look at the feeding guidelines on these bags of food, they give an approximate range for a 10 to 20 pound dog. And so that gives the client so much of an opportunity to loosely interpret the recommendation and overfeed. And so when I take on a client, this is part of like why I do what I do, is that I look at all their food, I look at all the treats, we figure out the number of calories that the pet needs based off their resting energy requirement and their lifestyle and their stage in life, and if they're neutered or not, to determine, okay, this is the exact number of calories that the pet needs to eat per day to maintain a healthy weight or to gain weight or to lose weight depending on their needs. And then we look at all the foods and all the treats, we calculate the calories in each one, and we come to an approximate or exact equation of what the pet needs to eat per day, and that way we can have established guidelines as to what to feed the pet to maintain that particular weight. And it's not an easy process, and it takes time, and it requires modifications all the time. Like, this food isn't working, my pet, I've run out of this, what I do? So it's an ongoing process, but you really need to know how many calories to eat per day to be able to maintain a healthy weight. And that's something we can do with our pet foods, because when we look at the package of treats, we look at the package of food itself, or if we're taking the individual components of the food, like you're making home prepared food, you can determine how many calories in a particular portion.
Are pet owners seeking pet care more often now than they did 10 years ago, do you think?
I don't observe them doing any less. I think it's really an individual thing, because there are some pets that certainly need more from veterinarians in terms of seeking care, and some that need less. I think cats are certainly one of the species that generally tends to need less, because a lot of times they're inside your house, they have consistent patterns, they're not getting traumatized or getting overly sick by going to dog parks and daycare and things like that. So cats lead these pretty safe indoor lifestyles for the most part, and so generally they seemingly need less care, but then cats tend to hide their problems a lot better, and you don't really know that something's going on that's right. potentially even very serious or life-threatening until it actually is. And so I think it's so crucial for all pets to at least have an annual physical exam, if not twice a year. I think having twice a year physical exam is really the best thing for our cats and dogs, because they can't always tell us what's going on. So I'm not directly observing people doing any kind of less, but I do think it's a very per pet thing, where they may need more care, they may need less depending on their age, their lifestyle, their breed. I mean, certainly like a large breed dog that goes hiking every day is probably going to need some more help on a day-to-day basis than a cat that just stays inside and never goes out and does anything.
I can't tell you how many times a day I wish I could just speak to my dog and that he would understand me. Like, Bingley, that dog behind the fence can't get to you. You don't need to bark at him. It's okay.
Oh my goodness, you have no idea. I think this almost daily when my dogs do crazy things as well. We call our chocolate lab Psycho Dog some days because there are things she does that I would just love to get inside her head to know what she is thinking. Like when she stands by the refrigerator door, just waiting for us to open it, and when we finally do, she does a 360 degree spin and barks like crazy. Not exactly normal.
Do you feed her things from the refrigerator, or does she just enjoy the opening of the refrigerator door?
We have never fed her anything directly from the refrigerator. And honestly, I think what it is she has this thing with what we call shadow monsters. When she was little, when the sun shines in our house at a certain angle, it will create shadows on the wall. And if those shadows, like if we would walk through it, or if it would move, like if like a reflection from a watch or a reflection from a phone, when that moves, she freaks out. And so when we open the refrigerator doors at a certain time of the day, it creates that shadow that goes across the wall. So I think that's what it is. I don't think she equates it with food at all.
Oh,
it's the stupid shadow monsters that she's trying to chase after. So, yeah.
So when we first got, we adopted our dog when he was probably like two. And mm-hmm. he had been with the a foster family for like 2 weeks, so, and they like had found him on the street before that, and so like we really didn't know what his like the first years of his life were like.
Yeah.
But he definitely had a lot of issues with like food hoarding, like he ate too fast and he'd get sick.
Yeah.
And you had to like kind of box out with your elbows when you were eating, especially if, you know, we were eating at like a coffee table or something where it was on his, you know, the level of his head, like he would just was really aggressive with taking food right off your plate. And so from the beginning we were like extremely strict about not giving him any food ever from like any human food ever, definitely not, you know, from your plate. And we kind of like squashed that like instinct in him, but to this day, like years later, he'll sometimes, I'll be holding a plate and he'll look at me like expectantly, and I'm like, Bingley, at what point in your doggy life with us have I ever given you anything from my plate? And it's just weird how that sticks with them. Like they're like, maybe just this once, like maybe today's the day.
And along those lines, we've never fed the dogs like from the table or from our plates, but I've made the mistake of feeding them little snacks and treats because they eat food. I mean, all they eat is people food. So if I'm cutting up vegetables or if I'm cutting up an apple, it's very normal for me to give them a little piece. So they don't try to grab food from our plates or from the table. They try to grab stuff from the counter.
Right.
And so I've created a bit of a monster with that, but yeah.
Well, we could, I know for a fact that I could talk about my dog all day long. So, that's it for our discussion on applying the holistic approach to pet care with Dr. Patrick Mahaney, a great thought leader in this industry of integrative, holistic pet care. So thankful for him sharing his insights with us. This is also the fourth and final episode of season 3 of the Holistic Matters podcast series. We hope all of our listeners enjoyed the conversations. Be sure to check out more on holistic veterinary care on holisticmatters.com. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. My name's Kara Cradle, and I'm here with Jody Griffiths. Thanks, everyone, for listening.